Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. This week, Pastor Jim continues our series, The Gospel According to John.
Well, good morning, and welcome to Olathe Wesleyan Church. I was back there during the prayer time and just thinking about when I was growing up as a kid. We moved around a lot, and so went from, I think I lived in 13 different homes before I graduated high school. And so I got kind of hardened to saying goodbye. It became just, when it was time to move, you would just move, and you would just kind of disengage with people and not really say goodbye. Just kind of pretend like at some point in the future you'll see each other again, and you kind of just move on. I am so glad that I get to be a part of a church that embraces sending people out. I am super excited about what God is going to do through Alicia, through Josiah, Braden. How can you forget Braden? Right? There he is. I forgot you, man. No. It's super cool to see how God's gonna bless through that. Well, Pastor Ken is gone today. Actually, did a wedding for his best friend's son this week, and so this weekend, so he's with them. But he wanted me to share a couple of things, just kind of in matter of housekeeping, before we get into the message this morning. As you've kind of probably toured the facility and looked around, if you've gone back to the gym, you see just this big mess of stuff that has been gathered and accumulated as a result of this partnership that we're entering into with Kids Own Learning Center, with the Family Conservancy to offer early childhood, early Head Start program. And so over the last few weeks, we've had trucks showing up with new stuff and UPS showing up with boxes after boxes after boxes as they prepare to outfit our classrooms. Three of those classrooms are really close to being finalized and finished. We still have two more to do in the near future. That process continues on, and we're excited about being able to finally have place 16 kids in our program. So we're really looking forward to that. If you've gone down this hallway and you've looked out the window, you see that they've made progress on our playground. They've poured the poured in place, rubberized. It's kind of cool, actually. I didn't think I'd like it, but I kind of dig it. Candy? I was wrong, so there you go. It's been really cool to see that. We've also been under construction over the past few weeks. It's kind of gone a little slower than we wanted it to, primarily because we've been kind of stuck with the city in getting a building permit. And I think we're at the point where that's been settled, that's been solved, and we're ready to move forward. So, yeah, I'm super excited about that. So hopefully this week we should begin to see a lot of progress on that, and hopefully we'll still be able to make our deadline, which is around the 28th of August, to have that work done, finished, completed, behind us. So super, super excited about looking forward to that. We've also been working on some other projects around here. Just wanted to give you an update. Many of you know that this summer we kind of embarked on, or the spring, we embarked on a capital campaign to raise funds to repair our parking lot. While the early Head Start was investing a lot of money internally in our facility, we thought it was necessary to address the parking lot, and I don't think anybody has really disagreed that it needs to be solved and needs to be fixed. And so we've been taking strides towards that. Just wanted to give you an update on the campaign that we did. It was called More Than the Spot. Through the campaign, we've raised $262,495 in pledges. That's pledges over a three-year period of time. To date, we've received $35,635, which is 13.5% of the total pledged, which is pretty awesome and pretty cool. So I appreciate those of you who have given. Even some of you have prepaid your pledges and just said, you know what, I'm going to put this towards it and get my pledge out of the way. So that's really helpful at this point. If there are others of you in the room who haven't started your pledge, I just encourage you to begin that on a regular basis. I'd also encourage you, if you're in a position where you feel like you can prepay some of your pledge and pay it in advance, that's only going to help us as we work out financing and those types of situations. So if you could do that, that would be great as well. We've been in the process of getting the architectural plans, drawings done for the parking lot. We had to engage engineers, and the engineering drawings were completed this past week, so we're just now waiting on the architectural landscape design. And once we have that, we will be ready to go. In addition to that, we've been working on financing, trying to figure out how we're going to be able to cover the capital that's required in the short term while we're waiting on pledges to come in. And so I actually heard back this week from a banker who gave us kind of the green light on a plan for us that the board still needs to review and look at. But we are well on our way to being able to see this happen, and super excited about that. And again, thank you for your faithfulness in making that happen, making that a priority, and helping us to update the outside parking lot for all the ministries that are served by this church. Another note, I was in Grand Rapids, Michigan this week, and Carol and myself were there, and we were attending a retreat for legal representatives for immigration. And during the course of the conversation, one of the things that we've been dreaming about as a kind of leadership team for that ministry is, what would it look like for us to be a part of church planting? What would it look like for us to open a center in a city, an immigrant center, that would become the basis through which a church would be planted? And I'm pleased to say that that's kind of gotten some traction among the leadership team, and God's been kind of pulling on the hearts of people who may step up to rise to the occasion, rise to the challenge to serve that role. And so I would appreciate your prayers that that God would just lead the correct person, that God would lead us to the right place as we strive to fulfill our mission as Olathe Wesleyan Church, which is to cultivate a church multiplication movement by making disciples of Jesus who passionately pursue whom God created them to be. Okay? On another note, in regards to church planting, again, we're about cultivating a movement, a church multiplication movement. I received word this week that a network has been formed in the Kansas district, so there are four or five churches that are coming together, putting up resources to plant another church, and so I will be having a meeting this week to talk about what our next steps are. The funding is available, and so at this point, we just, again, praying for a planter, praying for the right place, and beginning that process. So I don't know about you, but for me, I get jazzed when we start talking about church planting. You know, for 8 years, we've been kind of building this engine that allows us to have the resources that are required to plant new churches. And just some pretty cool things are happening that may enable us to be part of planting numerous churches. And I am super pumped about that. So thank you for your commitment to Olathe Wesleyan Church. Thanks for being a part of it. Thanks for dreaming, for believing that that we can do something more than just minister to ourselves. Okay? Okay, that's my updates. Okay. There was a lot there. Many of you know that I love fruit. You know, it really doesn't matter what kind of fruit it is. I just love fruit. Some people get cravings for cookies or sweets. I get cravings for a peach or a plum or an apple. You know, I just love fruit. Now, when I lived in West Michigan, it kind of worked like this, that you'd go to the grocery store during the summer and you could buy fruit, but as soon as it got like September, there was like no fruit available. Or like Red Delicious apples, blah. Bananas, blah. And then you could get like oranges in the winter. And that was like your selection of fruit. And I just remember just longing for like May and June to come so that I could get fruit again. Anybody else like that?
Yeah.
So I moved to Kansas, and it's a little different. I mean, the season's a little longer, which is cool. But still, you get into some of those winter months and you go to the grocery store and it's just like the whole place is covered with apples. It's like, I want a peach. I want a plum. Give me something good. And so when I'm anticipating the spring, I start going to the grocery store and I'm walking around and all of a sudden you see something show up on the shelves that hasn't been there in a really long time. And I notice it every year when this happens, like cherries. I love fresh cherries. I kind of dig those from Washington too, especially if Candy's bringing them and Candy's buying. It's really good. But when you go to the grocery store and the first time you see cherries in the spring, it's like, I want those. I've got to have them. Right? And then I look at the price tag. Right? $7.99 a pound, and it's like, I love cherries, but I don't think I love them that much. Now, if somebody else buys them, I'll eat them. I have to kind of revert back to the frozen kind of cherries, freezer section, they're at least cheaper than that. But then there comes this time in the season, in the summer, where you go and you look in the grocery store and there are cherries. And they have a different price tag, right? 99 cents, $1.99. It's like, I'm all in. Bring the back up the truck. Let's load up. Let's go for it, right? You see, we all make, there's always a value proposition, right? What do I mean by value proposition? Here's a definition. It's the reason given by a seller for buying their particular product or service, based on the value it offers customers. There's a value proposition in those cherries. At the beginning of the season, very early on, they say, you know what, people are going to pay a high price for these cherries because there's pent-up demand and there's limited supply. And as the summer moves on, there's greater supply, the pent-up demand is diminished, and all of a sudden they become cheaper. You know, for me, I'll buy cherries when they're cheap. I won't buy them when they're like gold, right? Everything has a value proposition to it, right? I was sitting on an airplane last night, and they handed me this napkin on Southwest Airlines. And it says, low fares, nothing to hide. We call it transparency, right? What are they selling? They're selling the fact that, hey, on this airline, you get to check your bags, and we don't charge you anything. On this airline, you can change your flight, and we're not going to charge you a $200 change fee. On this flight, we're going to give you access to online programming or through to the live TV. And so I was sitting on the plane last night, and the people sitting next to me had their iPad out, and they were watching the Olympics on the plane. I'm like, how cool is this, right? But Southwest, kind of, their value proposition is, hey, you fly with us, we're going to take care of you, we're going to take care of your bags, and we're going to give you entertainment. Right? That's the value proposition. This past week, I rented a car. And I went online last week to go ahead and get a quote what it's going to cost me to rent a car in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And if you haven't figured it out, I'm kind of frugal. pretty conservative. And so I logged in there, and I used to live in Grand Rapids. And I log in there, and it's like $65, $75 a day for a rental car. I'm going to rent a car for 3 days. I'm like, I just can't see that. $225 for that. And then I look at it, and it's like taxes another $150. And I'm like, there's just no way I'm going to do that. So I called my brother who lives outside of Grand Rapids and I said, hey, do you have an extra car? He goes, I don't have one this week. I'm like, oh, crud. So I had to break down and rent a car. And so I did what every normal person would do. I went online and I looked at the rental car places around the airport and I found that on 28th Street, there was an Enterprise. And so I quoted a car from there and it was like $30 a day to rent from there. I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool. So I think I wound up renting a car for like $130, $140 just 4 miles from the airport. It saved me, $200. So I get to the airport, and I'm like, okay, I've got a problem. There's like 4 or 5 miles between me and the car. So I use Uber. Just plug that in, and I paid like $10 to get to the rental car. And I'm like, why doesn't everybody do this? Why don't you rent off airport and get an Uber and go get your car? See, Enterprise makes a value proposition, right? They gave me two different options. I could rent from the airport and I could pay an extra $200, or I could rent off airport and I could pay $200 less. Guess which one? We choose to do the one off the airport. Because, again, I'm frugal. Others would call me cheap. You see, we all make value propositions all day long, every day, right? When you buy a home, it's like, is that home really worth the money that I'm going to invest in it? When I buy a car, is that car really worth me investing in it? Should I buy a new car? Should I buy a used car? Right? Is it really worth the value that it's presenting itself to have? We do that when we decide which school to go to. You know, if a graduate comes out of this school making X dollars a year, it's a better, potentially better deal than graduating from this school and only making X dollars. It's a value proposition. We do that when we take jobs. This job is going to give me this. I'm going to experience this. Or this job gives me this, and I'm going to experience this. Which one do I want? Which one do I choose? It's a value proposition. This morning, we're going to be looking at the Gospel of John. We're going to be taking a look at the value proposition for faith. The value proposition for faith. Namely, for believing that Jesus is God and the fact that he comes from the Father. If you've got your Bibles, go ahead and turn with me to John chapter 16. I'm going to begin reading in verse 16. It's also going to be on the screen for you. Jesus says this, "In a little while, you won't see anymore. You won't see me anymore. But a little while after that, you will see me again." Some of the disciples asked each other, "What does he mean when he says, 'In a little while, you won't see me, but then you will see me'? And I'm going to the Father." And what does he mean by a little while? We don't understand. Verse 19, Jesus realized they wanted to ask him about it. So he said, "Are you asking yourselves what I meant? I said, 'In a little while you won't see me, but a little while after that you will see me again.'" Now, isn't that really helpful? Thanks, Jesus. Have you ever been in that situation where you make a statement and somebody asks you, what did you mean by that? And you just use those same words? I kind of find joy in doing that sometimes. You know? It's like, well, what do those words mean? He goes on and says, "I tell you the truth. You will weep and mourn over what is going to happen to me, but the world will rejoice. You will grieve, but your grief will suddenly turn to wonderful joy. It will be like a woman suffering the pains of labor. When her child is born, her anguish gives way to joy because she has brought a new baby into the world. So you have sorrow now, but I will see you again. Then you will rejoice, and no one can rob you of that joy. At that time, you won't need to ask me for anything. I tell you the truth, you will ask the Father directly, and he will grant your request because you use my name. You haven't done this before. Ask using my name, and you will receive, and you will have abundant joy." Jesus says, "I have spoken of these matters in figures of speech, but soon I will stop speaking figuratively and will tell you plainly all about the Father. Then you will ask in my name. I'm not saying I will ask the Father on your behalf, for the Father himself loves you dearly because you love me and believe that I came from God. Yes, I came from the Father into the world, and now I will leave the world and return to the Father. Then his disciples said, At last you are speaking plainly and not figuratively. Now we understand that you know everything, and there's no need to question you. From this we believe that you came from God. Jesus asked, Do you finally believe? But the time is coming indeed, it's here now, when you will be scattered, each one going his own way, leaving me alone. Yet I am not alone because the Father is with me. I have told you all this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows, but take heart because I have overcome the world. You see, throughout the Gospel of John, the author has been presenting the value proposition in regards to believing that Jesus is the Messiah, that Jesus is the Son of God, and that by believing in him, you may have life by the power of his name. That's why John wrote the book in John chapter 20, verse 30, we're told that. Today's passage makes it clear that that value proposition for faith isn't necessarily what you might expect. I think for a long time in Christianity, the value proposition that we've made in regards to faith is believe because of heaven. If you believe, you can have heaven. If you believe, you can live with God forever in heaven. What's interesting to me about that is that in this passage, Jesus really doesn't mention anything about heaven. The value proposition that Jesus is making in this passage is leaving heaven out of it. It's almost like Jesus is saying, you know what? Believing in me and following after me is more than living with me forever in heaven. Right? In this passage, Jesus is presenting the value proposition for faith in the midst of what may be, at the moment, less than ideal circumstances. Now remember, the disciples are hanging out with Jesus. They've been in the upper room. Jesus has washed their feet. They've had the Last Supper together. Jesus is kind of giving them their final instructions, and he's saying, hey, I'm going to disappear for a while. You're going to be on your own. And one of you is going to betray me. Oh, by the way, Peter, you're going to pretend like you don't even know who I am. There's lots of angst. There's lots of tension in the room. Let's take a look at the text. A couple of observations that I have this morning. First, Jesus speaks directly to their loss, to their sense of loss. Jesus speaks to their sense of loss. In verse 20, he says, I tell you the truth, you will weep and mourn over what is going to happen to me. Saying, you know what? There's a rough time coming. You're going to weep, you're going to mourn because of what happens to me. And you're going to look out and you're going to see everybody else rejoicing. While you're weeping, while you're mourning, the world will be rejoicing. You will grieve, but your grief will suddenly turn to wonderful joy. Jesus speaks to their sense of loss. Notice that Jesus doesn't deny their pain. He doesn't just tap on the shoulder and say, hey, quit feeling that way. Jesus doesn't ignore their pain. He doesn't try to negate their pain, just saying, hey, just get over it. Put on your big boy pants and move on. He doesn't try to minimize their pain. He doesn't pretend like it's not there. He acknowledges it. He says, you know what? This can be tough. You're going to mourn. You're going to grieve. And all I can tell you is that you're going to mourn. You're going to grieve. And you're going to see the world rejoicing. You're going to think, what in the world is going on? But then your mourning, your grieving will turn to joy. Just remember that. So Jesus speaks to their sense of loss. He identifies with them. He identifies with them where they're at. The second observation I'd like to make is that Jesus reframes the situation for his disciples by sharing an analogy of childbirth to illustrate the connection between pain and joy. I think we live in a world where any pain is bad, right? That if you have any pain in your body, take some medicine, take an Advil, take an ibuprofen so that you no longer experience that pain. The world leads us to believe that all pain is bad, so avoid it at all costs. And Jesus uses this illustration of childbirth. In verse 21, he says this, it will be like a woman suffering the pains of labor. When her child is born, her anguish gives way to joy because she has brought a new baby into the world. So you have sorrow now, so you have pain now. But I will see you again and you will rejoice. And when that happens, guess what? Nobody can take it away from you. Jesus is helping his disciples to process the pain, the grief, the sorrow that they're about to experience. He's helping them to reframe the situation and say, you know what, there's pain, but you know what, through some pain, some really good stuff comes. Just keep that in mind. Third observation I'd like to make comes from verses 23 and 24. See, Jesus reminds them that they have direct access to the Father. That no longer do they have to use Jesus as an intermediary between themselves and the Father, but now, as a result of Jesus' going and as a result of Jesus' coming, they have direct access to the Father. They can relate to the Father. They can ask anything in Jesus' name, and they will receive it, and they will have abundant joy. The fourth observation is found in verse 27. Jesus reminds them that the Father dearly loves them. The Father dearly loves them. Starting in verse 26, then you will ask in my name. I am not saying that I will ask the Father on your behalf, for the Father himself loves you dearly. Because you love me and believe that I came from the Father. I don't know about you, but sometimes that's a hard truth to hear. Or better yet, it's a hard truth to believe. See, for many of us, we have these thoughts that are going on in our head saying, how in the world could anybody love me? How in the world could God love me? And we begin playing the tapes, we begin playing the movies back in our mind. And we convince ourselves that we are beyond the reach of God's grace or God's forgiveness. We certainly don't deserve God's love. And that's true. But it doesn't change the fact that God dearly loves each and every one of us in this room. Another observation is found in verse 30. Jesus reminds them that he is God, that he has sent by the Father. Now we understand that we know everything in verse 30. And there's no need to question you. From this we believe that you came from God. When I was reading this passage of scripture in this verse, it kind of struck me. It's like, what is belief? What is faith? In that verse it says, they said, there's no need to question you. Have you ever come to that point in your life where there's no longer a need to question God? There's no longer a need to question Jesus? For the last 16 chapters in the Gospel of John, we've watched Jesus interact with these disciples. We've watched Jesus perform these seven miraculous signs. We've watched Jesus proclaim that I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life, I am I am the vine, I am the truth, all that stuff. He's declared, I am God. And at different times, Jesus would kind of rebuke his disciples, saying, do you not yet believe? You saw me do this, and yet you still don't believe. You saw me do this, and yet you still don't believe. You saw me do this, and yet you still don't believe. And here in this passage, here in John chapter 16, all of a sudden the disciples are like, we're done asking Jesus questions. He knows everything. And you know what? We're just going to trust that. We're going to believe that. And as a result of doing that, their lives were totally transformed and changed. What would it take for you to get to that point where there's no more need to question Jesus? There's no more need for you to say, Jesus, prove yourself. Jesus, if you do this, then I will follow you. Jesus, if you do this, then I will do that. What does it take? Jesus reminds his disciples that he is God and that the Father has sent him. In verse 33, we see another observation. We see that Jesus told his disciples all of this for a purpose, for a reason. And it says, Jesus told all of his disciples this so that they may have peace. I have told you all this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows, but take heart, because I have overcome the world. See, Jesus wants his disciples to experience incredible joy, abundant joy, and he wants his disciples to experience peace. I don't know about you, but joy and peace tend to be very difficult in times of trials and sorrow. It's really hard to focus on the good stuff when the whole world feels like it's falling apart around you. Jesus reminds us that there will be trials and sorrows. And then Jesus reminds his disciples that he will overcome the world. So what is this value proposition that Jesus is making? What is this value proposition that Jesus is making in regards to faith? It isn't about heaven. It has nothing to do with materialism. As a result of following Jesus, as a result of believing, as a result of faith, I'm going to have this big home. I'm going to have nice cars. I'm going to have a wonderful family. I'm going to have a great retirement account. Right? That's not part of Jesus' value proposition. The value proposition that Jesus is making is that we can experience abundant joy and peace even in the midst of pain and sorrow. We can have abundant joy and peace even in the midst of trials and suffering. That, my friends, doesn't compute for the rest of the world. That, my friends, doesn't compute for people who are walking in darkness. It kind of blows me away when I think about this value proposition. You know, if Jesus were really trying to sell it, you know, what would the napkin say, right? It's like picture of heaven, you know, just this incredible image, something that exceeds Trump Tower by like a billion or a gazillion, right? Right? But Jesus makes this value proposition. It says, if you believe in me, if you put your faith in me, if you believe that God sent me, if you're done asking me questions, if you've come to that point in your life, then I can assure you that when you're going through storms, when you're going through trials, when you're going through suffering, you can experience abundant joy. You can experience peace like you've never experienced before. In the midst of that, Jesus gives us perspective. So how does it work? How does it work practically for us? It begins with believing in Jesus. It begins saying, you know what? God, I'm done asking the questions. I just believe. I believe that you're God. I believe that you have been sent by the Father. And when you come to that point, it doesn't mean when you accept Christ, when you say, I believe, it doesn't mean that all the problems go away, despite what others may tell you. The problems may still be there. The suffering, you still endure suffering. There's still pain. But in the midst of it, you remember Jesus is Lord. Jesus is God. He was sent by the Father. The second thing you remember that the Father dearly, 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 dearly loves each one of you. And as a result of Jesus being God, and me being loved by the Father, it gives me a perspective on life that I can endure the suffering. I can endure the pain because God is God. I can endure the suffering because I am dearly loved child of the King. And then we need to be reminded that Jesus has overcome the world. The truth is, there's nothing that you're going to experience that is any greater than what Jesus endured or experienced. And Jesus overcame that. And since Jesus is God, since he dearly loves you, you know what? He will see you through. Right? Friends, you have to come to the point where you no longer question Jesus. Where you say, I believe, I put my full faith and trust and belief in Jesus. We have to learn to rest in God's love. Because you have incredible worth to God. Don't ever forget that. Don't let anyone tell you that you don't, because you do. And we need to be reminded that Jesus has overcome the world, that he wins in the end. Friends, if we can maintain that kind of perspective, then we can experience joy and peace, even in the midst of trials and suffering. Would you pray with me?
Thanks again for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. To learn more, visit us at olathewesleyan.org or visit us on a Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. for our worship gathering. Thanks again. God bless.